Clint Eastwood's Million Dollar Baby is a masterpiece, pure and simple, deep and true. It's from Roger Ebert, Chicago Sun-Times. That's our old movie this week because it is the Academy Awards special edition here at Cinephile. And that's why I want to talk about Million Dollar Baby, which did a phenomenal job at the Academy Awards back in 2004, winning Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, and Best Supporting Actor. Of course, the actors being Hilary Swank and Morgan Freeman. Our new film this week is The Quiet Girl, which did not win at last night's Academy Awards, but it's a terrific film from Ireland. It's the final of the nominees I've seen for Best International Feature Film. I'm also going to do real quickly a few of the shorts as well, because those are readily available now on streaming services. But enough blabbing out of me. We're going to get to the man of the hour, Ben Lyons, who has covered the Academy Awards. He's done it with me. He's been a voice of entertainment in this country. Here's me and Ben breaking down the Oscars right now. As promised, our buddy Ben Lyons is back. His annual appearance here on the Academy Awards. The first thing that Ben noticed, of course, and for those who are unaware, he does a great job. He's basically running Amazon Sports Content, does a morning show called Bonjour. And Bonjour, we say to Ben right now, Ben, I'm wearing a tuxedo because this is the tuxedo you told me to get when you got me to the Oscars. And we did it twice together. And most famously, after we did the Oscars together, you said, you want to go In-N-Out Burger? And we went to In-N-Out Burger in our tuxedos. It felt like a scene out of Pulp Fiction.
Well, I'm proud of you for only having In-N-Out Burger on Oscar night so you can still fit into that tuxedo, which is now about 7 years old, I think. 8 years old on the tux. So, and now, I don't know if it's the Pilates, the hot yoga, whatever that treatment was that Jimmy Kimmel mentioned that all the celebrities are doing now in LA to stay thin. You look good, buddy.
I appreciate it, man. You too. I did have to kind of give a suck in on the waist a little bit, but yes, we did get the tuxedo on. You worked, for those who don't know, Ben worked for E! News a long time. He worked the entertainment circuit. He works the Oscars. He's been to the Cannes Film Festival, et cetera. We're going to do the Oscars in detail, but I want to do a little bit of red carpet first because the moment everyone's talked about that went viral, whatever the hell that means in this day and age, Ashley Graham and Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant, you are a veteran of the Oscars, and you've been here a few times. Yeah. What's your favorite thing about coming to the Oscars?
It's fascinating. The whole of humanity is here. It's Vanity Fair.
Oh, it's all about Vanity Fair. Yes, that's where we let loose and have a little bit of fun. What are you most excited to see tonight?
To see?
Yeah, well, I know that you probably watched a few of the movies. Are you excited to see anybody win? Do you have your hopes up for anyone?
No one in particular.
Okay, well, what are you wearing tonight then?
Just my suit.
Your suit? Who made your suit? You didn't make it.
I can't remember. My tailor.
That's okay. Yeah. Shout out to the tailor.
Yeah.
So tell me, what does it feel like to be in Glass Onion? It was such an amazing film. I really loved it. I love a thriller. How fun is it to shoot something like that?
Well, I'm barely in it. I'm in it for about 3 seconds.
Yeah, but still, you showed up and you had fun, right?
Almost.
Okay, all right. Okay. Well, thank you so much. It was nice to talk to you.
Yeah.
All right, back to you guys.
I was on the Dan Le Batard show earlier, and Dan said to me, I've always felt Hugh Grant was an asshole, and I think that was proven, but I also don't think Ashley Graham's questions were particularly good, and I said both can be true. What did you think?
I don't think Hugh Grant's necessarily an asshole. I thought he was rather on brand in his answers to those questions and his reaction to her abrupt goodbye. Look, you've been on that exact stage where she was asking questions. It's incredibly awkward. It's uncomfortable. It's loud. Everybody's wearing prom clothes across the street from a Hooters on Hollywood Boulevard at 3 p.m. Like, there's nothing natural about it. Everyone's senses are on overload. And think about this. It's just a congregation of people. We're oftentimes placed in social situations where we're forced to congregate around other human beings at an airport here in New York City, riding the subway, but never in a place where everyone's hopes and dreams are just around the corner. Like, so you have everybody who's got their own issues now projecting them into a congregation of other people with their own social insecurities. So what's left is all of these awkward social exchanges. And that's why, Adnan, I always thought you'd be so good at that, because you can talk to anyone like they're a real person. She's asking him, what are you excited to see? As if he's like a child being let out into the wild for the first time. It's ridiculous.
I mean, it's a softball, though. That's a softball. Now, everybody gets asked that.
You got to do a little bit of your homework and go, hey, your fellow nominee is nominated for this. How excited are you for that? Like, if Ben's smart enough to know, oh, you're here presenting an award and you're probably promoting some project, but you have this relation to this. If you're just saying, what are you excited to see? It's too broad.
oh, you liked being in that Glass Onion movie? What was that like? He's like, oh, I was there 3 days because I had to make some money to pay off some something or other. Like,
but that's the reason he's there. But if it's not for Glass Onion, he's probably not even at the Oscars. That's why he's there. I think that's a jerk move by him there. Like, yeah, you're in it for 3 minutes, but that's why you're here. I don't know. I'm kind of Team Ashley.
Ben, don't you think she lost him when he made a Vanity Fair reference, which is a reference to the Thackeray novel.
She didn't get it.
And she thought Vanity Fair movie. And he goes, you know what? You didn't get the joke. Now I'm going in a different direction. That's
1,000%. He said Vanity Fair. And she's like, what? The hot party? Yep. Oscar night. He's like, no. What are we doing here? Honey, get the valet key. Like, let's go. Yeah.
I don't want to bring up memories. Hey, best interview, worst interview, because you're a great interviewer and everyone loves talking to you. And I would always drop your name and then we'd get excited. I would see Damien Chazelle and go, hey, I'm here with Ben Lyons. He goes, oh, I love Ben. Ben's great. Or Emma Stone and you were friends. But I did think this at one point. I go, imagine if Ben had to interview like Tommy Lee Jones on the red carpet. I don't know if you ever have, but to me, I've heard he's a notoriously tough interview.
That would be tough on a red carpet. That's a tough one. Tommy Lee Jones, not necessarily the most chatty in those situations. I do remember one time, this is really messed up, and I don't even know if I should share this story, but I'm amongst friends the day after the Oscars. Why not? Live. Didn't know what was happening. Somebody came up to me. They said, you're about to interview the Mexican Tom Cruise. And some Mexican guy came up to me. I still to this day don't know who I talk to. Hey, how excited for the night? What's your favorite film of the year? What are you working on next? And kept him moving. I was like, I don't know.
Tomas Cruz.
Exactly. Penelope Cruz's younger brother. That's who it was.
But what I'm always amazed of, Adnan, is how nervous some of the biggest stars in the world are there. Like, I remember being backstage one year and Matt Damon got off stage. He was like, oh my God, that was intense. I'm like, really, Will Hunting? Like, you're a huge star. You're Jason Bourne. You can go through the streets of Berlin on a moped, but you're afraid to read a teleprompter on television? Like, it's really weird that you and I are comfortable there and these big stars are nervous.
Let's get into Matt Damon and Jimmy Kimmel, because Cody knows one of the great moments of my life and my wife Eamon's night is when Ben after the Oscars goes, hey, do you want to go to Jimmy Kimmel's after party? I said, sure. And this is how great Ben is, Cody. Matt Damon walked in and Ben taps him on the shoulders behind him and goes, man, they let everybody into this party. He's busting Matt Damon's balls. Oh. And Damon goes, hey, Ben, what's up, man? Because I'm a big hug. That's Ben Lyons. But let's get to Jimmy Kimmel.
No, but you and I are good at those things because you're excited to see Michael Keaton and talk Pittsburgh Pirates. I was excited to see Gucci Mane and told him that I read his autobiography.
Both of those are absolutely
true. Can't get lost in the sauce, Adnan. Can't get lost in the sauce.
So I thought Kimmel was great. And again, you and I are hosts, but this is why you need a host as a connective tissue. You come out, you welcome the audience, you address the elephant in the room, the slap, you make jokes about it, you go 10 minutes. I thought it was timely. I thought it was topical. As always, Kimmel's very comfortable in his skin. If a joke doesn't land, he doesn't care. He keeps going on. I like the uncomfortable jokes. I like the, are we going to vote for Robert Blake in memoriam? That's not going to land with everybody, but I'm like, he's going to go in that direction. I thought he did a terrific job. It was good to see Jimmy Kimmel back.
Did something really smart out of the gate, Cody. He got everyone excited. He didn't come out there and take pot shots at people. Everyone's nervous. Yeah. He's going to call them out. He made them all feel like winners in those first 2 minutes. Got everybody cheering, buying into the evening. He's got to be the most dialed in the room. And he owned the fact that it was going to take 3 hours and 45 minutes. And you think about the star power that they were able to attract to the Academy Awards, which is pretty impressive because just down the street, the New York Knicks were beating the Los Angeles Lakers 112-108. Denzel Washington, of course, there. Spike Lee. So all the big stars, RJ Barrett. No Jalen Brunson in street clothes, unfortunately. So a lot of big stars downtown LA. The fact they even got some there at the Kodak Theater, very impressive.
Yeah, he was getting off jokes at Spielberg out of the gates and, you know, such a lack of creativity. He has to make movies about himself now. Seth Rogen getting high with Spielberg. So, I mean, I thought that went really well. Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's been a long time we've seen this, Ben. In the preferential ballot, everyone wins a little bit. You get 2 Oscars, you get 3. Spotlight will win Best Picture, but nothing for acting, but they'll get screenplay. Rare to see this old school way of 7 Academy Awards and the big time ones. Like, if you go above the line, as they say in the business, you know, picture, director, 4 acting categories, and I'll throw in screenplay, to get 6 or 7, I know this wasn't Silence of the Lambs, which was actor, actress, director, picture, screenplay, but that's still 6 of 7 for a movie, which is wild. wildly audacious, strange, and weird. And you and I are fans of it. Those that love it say, hey, it was audacious and different. Those that hated it go, it was too weird, it was too long. But that's pretty rare to see. That was like an old school juggernaut last night.
Deep dive X's and O's analysis here on the Academy Awards. Where else but Cinephile? And you're absolutely right, Adnan. It's almost as if some of the old school mentality around honoring a film showed its head in this new school Academy that we have, of all these different voices, a larger voting base, an audience that is looking for something memorable and not status quo. That movie checks a lot of boxes, and it checks my box for Best Picture, which is, am I seeing something on film that I've never seen before? And am I now looking at the world I live in through a different lens? And I think that film checks both of those criteria, and that changed the way of filmmaking. An ambitious film, only the second film the guy editing it ever worked on, which is wild. So you have all these kind of interesting people who find themselves in this wild movie that's about imagination and taking chances, and of course the superhero in all our lives and our mother. And I just thought it was so beautiful and deserving of the award because it took big risks. It wasn't just a cookie cutter, oh, this is going to win all the Oscars because it's a period piece and it's got this actor in it. No, it defied convention in its casting, in its creativity, and in the screenplay and the special effects. Like, it's just a wonderful film, and I'm proud of the Academy for giving it as much love as it did.
We grew up in those 90s movies of Miramax, since Disgrace because the wine scenes, but we love those films, you know, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Sling Blade, Fargo. That's where, to me, this is a real moment for A24. Like, they're like, we're going to make independent movies and take chances. This movie came out late March, early April. At that time, Ben, I was resistant because I go, sci-fi, mother-daughter movie, it's probably not for me. But then everybody keeps seeing it. It's still in the top 10. Let me go see it. Oh, this is incredible. But it's not going to win. It might get a couple nominations. Maybe Yo wins, but that's it. And then it kept picking up momentum. These movies, it never happens like this. What an enormous moment for A24. $75 million that movie made, and they won 7 Oscars? That's great for independent cinema.
It's amazing for independent cinema. I love how many shout outs A24 gets throughout the course of the night. And if you're just coming down from another planet and you're watching this for the first time, knowing nothing of Hollywood, you're like, those A24 people seem really popular. They seem to get a lot of the shout outs. And you're like, yeah, because they're a studio that's taking chances on this type of material. Look at last year with Coda. That film came out at the Sundance before the Oscars. It was like a 14-month run to Best Picture. This last film, Everything Everywhere All at Once, premiered at South By last March down in Texas. So another year-long campaign. And that's what it takes for a film that doesn't have the bankable box office stars or notable name recognition behind it. You got filmmakers who people aren't necessarily familiar with. You got to have a long lead. You got to have a presence at the festivals. You got to take a time and a slow build. They timed it perfectly as the toast of the night, winning, like you said, 6 out of the 7 awards. It's big time.
Supporting actress I whiffed on. I thought it would be Angela Bassett, but I wasn't totally shocked. Once Jamie Lee Curtis won the SAG, I go, okay, this is what this is going to be. Neither of them give the best performances of their careers, but this is going to be the Lifetime Achievement Award. So do you think Angela Bassett should win and should have won 30 years ago for What's Love Got to Do with It? Or is this Jamie Lee Curtis's moment, Fish Called Wanda, Trading Places? And she's in the movie. That's the best movie of the year. Or is it Carrie Condon who's going to win? She won the BAFTA. Maybe she should win for Banshees. I didn't have an issue with her winning. I don't think it's Jamie Lee Curtis's best Oscar. But you know, I've seen that plenty of times. It's a Lifetime Achievement Award. And it was a great speech. Really touching. Of course, her parents, Hollywood royalty, Tony Curtis and Janet Leigh.
That was really cool, Adnan. As somebody, you know, who grew up in the industry because of my dad and my grandfather, like, I'm always rooting for people who are able to create their own career and write their own path. And like, it's not just her parents who are in the business, like heavy hitters in the business too. And she goes on to have an incredible career. I love she shouted out the genre films that she's so known for, of course, those Halloween movies that oftentimes probably throughout her career maybe took away a little bit from her credibility as a serious actress, or maybe she lost some key roles that would have seen her win an Oscar earlier in her career because of, oh, she's part of those slasher movies, can't take her seriously. No. And the fact that she's part of the most memorable film of the year is perfectly deserving. Yes, Angela Bassett, a wonderful career and probably should have been honored for something else besides Black Panther 2. She was fine in the movie. She thought she was very good. But again, you know, this movie, Everything Everywhere All at Once, the marquee has a bunch of consonants on it. It's definitely not a good title in terms of marketing, but marketing a film with Oscar wins, that's the best medicine. And I think Jamie Lee Curtis is speech was spot on. But again, have a soft spot in my heart for those who grew up with famous parents and are able to create their own path and add to the world of cinema. And she did that.
Chris, you can speak to this. You've talked before. People talk about nepotism. They mock you. You're only there because you're your dad. You and Ben know what this is like.
Yeah, it's something I deal with all the time. It's always my, if whenever I do anything, there's one comment about nepotism.
You know, when I'm watching you out at Lake Tahoe covering the golf, or you had NBA All-Star Weekend with Amino Hassan, I'm thinking, boy, Jamie Lee Curtis would be really proud of Cody.
Yes, Greg Cody. Greg Cody didn't do any of that for me. That's me doing that.
Michelle Yeoh wins, and of course, shout out to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I'm just glad that that was recognized. My two probably favorite feel-good moments, Ke Huy Quan, which we knew was coming. This guy hadn't acted for 30 years. When he saw Harrison Ford backstage at the Oscars lunch, he goes, I don't know if he'll remember me. And then he called him by his character's name in Temple of Doom. They hugged. The picture broke the internet. And of course, Harrison Ford awarded Best Picture, so he and Ke Huy Quan got to have that big hug together. You knew his speech was going to be great. He knocked it out of the park. And most happily for me, there's always one award you and me say, hey, yo, if there's one award, I'll be happy with this. For me, it was Brendan Fraser for The Whale. I thought it was a great film. It got mixed reviews. It was nominated. It did win for makeup as well. Hong Chau was up for supporting actress. You and I know Aronofsky takes chances. I didn't like Mother. I thought that was a miss, but I love The Wrestler. I love Wrecking for a Dream, and I love what he did with The Whale, and I love Brendan Fraser's story. That's a great comeback story. Hardworking guy, genuine, sweet, and it was nice to see him recognized.
Would have been nice if both those guys, who are far classier than the three of us, have gotten up on that stage and said, you know what? It feels great to win this Oscar because all you fuckers passed over me the last 30 years. Fuck you. Fuck you.
Yes.
Fuck you. You're okay. I should have gotten that role, but I forgive you. And fuck you. Like, that would have been amazing. That's literally what they're thinking. And honestly, I'm so happy for Brendan Fraser that he doesn't have to go through this anymore for this movie. He has looked so stressed out and so just like emotional throughout all of these award shows, having to go up and have a new speech each time. Like, I'm happy he's done with that right now. He can get some time on a beach and just relax and contemplate if he's going to go back to the center of the earth, go on another journey or whatever he does. I think, I think when you are honoring these performances, it would be completely disingenuous to factor in all of the previous work and where they're at in their career and their life. Like, I know you're supposed to be unbiased and just look at the work on the screen, but how can you not root for these men and women who have been overlooked, who have had to reinvent themselves? The fact that Jimmy Kimmel shouted out one of my favorite movies ever, a seminal Encino Man. It's just a brilliant piece. It would be wonderful on stage. I think they could adapt it to Broadway. Donde Estás El Baño? I know how to say that because of Encino Man. I love that that Pauly Shore sitting at home somewhere being like, oh, I could have come back too. That's a great movie. So shout out to Encino Man and Brendan Fraser for getting it done. The category, guys, that I was rooting for, and this, I guess, is some recency bias. I had the privilege at a super hipster theater in Brooklyn where they were selling, like, you know, gluten-free everything and kimchi this and all this stuff. You know, it had kombucha, the whole thing. I went on Saturday and went to a block of programming for the animated shorts category. So I watched all those.
You want to see My Year of Dicks win.
My Year of Dicks is really funny. My Year of Dicks is tremendous. I was an Ice Merchants guy. That movie moved tears with no dialogue. I thought it was wonderful. But The Boy, the Hound, the Fox, the Horse, J.J. Abrams, whatever you want. It's a magical film that will make you believe in life and love again. So I was very moved this year by animated shorts. Very happy to see that category last night.
You're right. The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Whale, what the hell it is. Fox and the Horse. It's available, readily available. I believe it's on Hulu. Because people were asking me, in the past with shorts, you and I would have to get links from people. 12 of the 15 shorts are available on YouTube, Hulu, or Netflix, or Disney+. So you can actually watch a lot of these shorts. And I'm with you on Ice Merchants. Wasn't crazy with The Flying Sailor, 8 minutes. Guys naked flying through the air. I don't understand that nomination. But that movie is so sweet. The one scene where he's like, you know, the greatest thing you can ask for is help. What does it mean in life? Acceptance. I'm with you, man. I watched it with my kids and I thought it's a sweet film. Ben's right.
Who's the next, and this is for both of you, who you think, who's the next Brendan Fraser or Jamie Lee Curtis? An actor or actress that's, you know, you're not thinking will be nominated, but with the right role, we could see something like this.
I'm going to give you some of these younger cats who I kind of came up with because I was covering The Hunger Games and Twilight and these types of movies. Like, imagine you're a guy like Taylor Lautner. You're the guy, right? It's Jacob or Edward for Bella's love. You're in this John Singleton action movie, you know? And then all of a sudden, like, it just stops. It doesn't happen. I know Taylor's gotten married, his personal life settling down, still probably bathing in Twilight residuals. However, went on a run, and now we don't see it anywhere.
It was so Grown-Ups, I think, was the last one, right? It was the, you know, bad, I mean, guy.
What does that do to the mentality of, like, okay, I was a leading man, I had a thing going. Okay, got to reinvent it a little bit. You think of Josh Hutcherson, right, who played PETA in those Hunger Games movies. He was in all these cool movies, like the one with Julianne Moore, of course, that was nominated, and Annette Bening that was at the Oscars a few years ago. And then now all of a sudden it's like, where's Josh Hutcherson? So trying to reinvent yourself when you're going down one path. Brendan Fraser was a huge star in the late 90s, early 2000s, like big studio films. And then slowly but surely, like, the phone doesn't ring and you're left looking for a job. And so now get to reinvent himself as an Oscar winner is very cool.
I'll go with Jason Patrick. Always loved his work. I watched Narc again recently. I watched Sleepers again recently. That guy was great in the 90s. Had a big hit. Obviously, Speed 2 was in the Alamo. Rush was a great film, but a drug addict. Jason Patrick's always been an actor. I'm like, dude, that guy's a great actor. He's 56. He'll get a comeback role one day. He's going to be fine. The Daniels, Ben. I knew they'd win for editing, and sometimes people will mock and go, it's not the best editing, it's the most editing. But there's like a billion cuts in that movie. And as you said, the guy, the second we ever edited, I would have preferred McDonough for screenplay, since I want Banshees to get something, but I have no issue with them winning for screenplay. I was thrilled they won for director and, of course,
they got the donkey out on the stage. They brought the donkey on the stage.
Exactly. Our friend Claire Atkins took a little shot at one of the Daniels with the fact that I think in his second speech, might have been for director, he said something, or maybe it was in the best picture, he said, you just need someone to unlock your genius now that my genius has been unlocked. I'm like, he's referring to himself as a genius right now. Like, this is a little too feeling myself.
No, I'll grew up on Kanye. Look, we're all part of a generation that grew up, college dropout album was a big thing for us. So yeah. Get it. It's his influence, you know?
But I generally speaking, when God, if ever you and I win an award, the first thing to me is you always got to thank the other nominees. Like, you win, you go, hey, fellas, I just want to thank Ryan Seacrest and Mike Tirico, and you guys do an awesome job, and I'm really great to be in this room.
If I ever win an award and I have to get up in front of a group of people, I can promise you I'm never going to say I want to thank Ryan Seacrest.
Even if he's a fellow nominee, you're not going to then. Okay. Hey, it's not really, it's just, an honor to be in this category.
I just want one time a winner to be like, I was inspired by three of these performances. Yours was okay.
Andrew Riseborough, very controversial nomination. I thought Daniel Deadweiler got screwed for Till. I don't want to go into it right now, but honestly, it's not fair what you did. You shouldn't have been allowed this nomination. But the Daniels are ones to watch. How about the fact, Ben, they made Swiss Army Man, which features a corpse in flatulence, and now these guys won an Oscar.
Yeah, the Sundance DNA that is evident at the Oscars is just tremendous. Like, I love it. You see Miles Teller, part of Top Gun, that goes back to Whiplash. You see Michael B. Jordan up on that stage presenting because of the success of Creed. Well, it goes back to him having a star-turning performance in Fruitvale Station. Like, there are so many Sundance moments. Sundance is really the G League of Hollywood in terms of developing this talent so they can go on and compete at the highest level. I like you, Cody. I would take the approach. I grew up watching some of you, and some of you probably should have hung it up when I was a kid. Anybody got a score in the Knick game? I heard Julius Randle's leading the league in first quarter threes at 18 points in the first. Can anybody got a score in the Knick game here?
There's no question. Any award you win, you're ending with Go Knicks. I mean, that you could take that to the house.
You would have laughed last night, Adnan. I'm sitting there watching. I've got the game on. I've got the awards on. And I'm like, yes! And family's looking over, they're like, you really care about editing that much? I'm like, no, it's a Josh Hart N1. Like,
shout out to Villanova. All Quiet the Western Front did really great. It's good for foreign films. It's good to see. At one point, you started to say, does this going to have momentum? And it was kind of like a Mad Max thing. Like, they're going to win some categories. They're not going to win the major categories. But obviously, a very impressive war film. And that's very good news for Netflix. I also thought, and this is a film that you loved, and I liked a lot too. I had it in my honorable mentions for top 10. I don't know if you did your top 10. You didn't release it on social this year, if you did. But you told me over lunch how much you loved Babylon. I had it winning in the two categories. I thought it would win for production design, which if you didn't like the movie, that's fine. But the production design is incredible. And I thought Justin Hurwitz would win for score. I loved that jazzy score. It went 0-2. Tell us why you did love Babylon.
I love Babylon because it takes us inside the industry of Hollywood from the jump, from the early days of cinema when they were making the transition from silent films to the talkies and to sound. And it gave you just an appreciation for the technical advancements and achievements. Like, you can go to the theater now and become so washed over by just, oh, okay, Avatar, special effects, Black Panther, wow, Wakanda looks real. But you go back and you look at how they incorporated sound and more, you know, artistic styles of editing and acting and storytelling. Boy, what a wild, wild west time it was back in the Babylon days. And I just thought it was such, you know, I also think it's tremendous when you have set pieces and extras and you're using lighting and makeup and costumes and you're not using those CGI effects of those other movies I mentioned. And the movie feels equally epic. Like those party scenes, those scenes with Spike Jonze shooting, trying to race the lights, like they feel iconic. And you're making a movie about the making of Hollywood and icon, like why we all fell in love with cinema in the first place. I thought it was dope. I thought it was really cool. Nobody gave a shit. Like nobody cared about Babylon at all. I thought Hurwitz would win again for score. What, that'd be his third Oscar?
Yeah.
Maybe he's too young. He's under 40, I think, or 45. But yeah, you know, you mentioned Mad Max. I remember that was the year you and I were covering the Oscars, and we were doing it with Sophia Carlson, who performed last night at the Oscars. What if Adnan, like, we had to do what she also, like, she came into our world hosting the red carpet, did a really good job a couple years. What if we had to get out on that Oscar stage with Diane Warren and belt one out? You're dressed for it now. But my gosh, what a talent. Were we just, like, totally, like, oblivious to the fact that at our production meetings, we're, like, sitting with one of the most talented women in the world?
Dude, I couldn't believe it. People were texting, "That's your girl." I'm like, "Yeah." I go, "Me, Ben, Sophia Carson, Troy Gentile. We did the Academy Awards one year. Weesum was the next year." But yeah, I was like, "I can't believe I know somebody who is performing the Oscars. She killed it." I mean, and as you said, Diane Warren. For those that don't know, like, legendary composer. Like, I mean, it was awesome to see Sophia there, and she crushed it. And in answer, no, you and I would, I don't think, realized what a big deal she was and how big a deal she continues to be. So I agree with you. She absolutely crushed it. Speaking of performances, though, I'm thrilled that Natu won. I mean, nobody loves MLB Network more than Jeffrey Lyons, your father. Today, Harold Reynolds, who is the face of the network, called me, and he goes, "Hey, what'd you think of the Oscars?" And I said, "It was great." And he goes, "How about that Natu? Because that was unbelievable." I go, "Yeah," because that was the performance of the night for me. Those guys crushed it.
This is why the Oscars exist. This is why all these award shows exist. So guys like Harold Reynolds can be talking about films that you would never expect a guy like Harold Reynolds to be talking about. You know, we got to get Cinephile back to the Oscars next year. I know, Cody, you put up the Hail Mary a little late in the game.
Yeah, a little late in the game.
You know, I was focused on this Josh Hart trade. Knicks go 9-0 once they move to Josh Hart. Now 10-3 since the Hart deal. So I had my priorities elsewhere, but it is a mission of mine to get Cinephile back to the Oscars. Do you have a tux, Chris?
I'll have one. Oh, I'll have. I'm doing a weird thing where Adnan's only wearing a tux on the top. I'm only wearing the pants. So
kind of like Riz Ahmed, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which part of the tux you want to wear? You know,
right. Oh, love the Riz Ahmed. Love the Riz Ahmed. Colorado. I'm going to bring that back to a 70s style. Speaking of 70s style, John Travolta. Normally, In Memoriam is a little bit awkward, and you go, I don't know why. You know, Sean Penn is presenting it, but we can make the Travolta jokes and the wickedly funny Adele to Zima Demonzel. I'm all for that. But got choked up, and it was emotional when he said, "Hopelessly devoted to you." I believe that's the song from Grease, which he was mentioning to Olivia Newton-John. I thought that was really sweet. It was a nice moment. But how do you miss Paul Sorvino? Like, him and Anne Hesh, I don't get it. I know it's a hard job, Ben, but someone in the room is going to go, "It sounds morbid, but who are we missing? Can we get Paul Sorvino and Anne Hesh in there? How does that happen?"
I don't know how that happens. Maybe, Adnan, there's something from the families behind the scenes where they proactively say, "We don't want to be included in this moment," or I don't know. But yeah, it is always a part of the show I like morbidly and oddly look forward to as a demarcation of time. And you think of all the legends lost and how their films will live forever. And yeah, I mean, John Travolta, obviously no stranger to loss in his own life. So it was an emotional moment last night for sure. Yeah. And honestly, like, that's something you really appreciate and to ground the night, right? When everybody's all excited and winning and looking great and feeling good, like, let's take a moment and be grateful that we're even here and have this privilege to do this. And that was the thing I took away too. It really feels like for the first time since the pandemic that now everybody's back in the theater, back outside at these events and appreciating that you don't get to be in those rooms every single year. And that's why, and Cody, I'm gonna rile up Adnan here. You ready?
Tom Cruise thankfully wasn't there last night.
It was a big deal that your boy wasn't there last night, you know, because it is something that people should appreciate, that privilege of being in that theater. So you have the opportunity to do it. And you say, nah, I'm good. I'm gonna go try and find the tallest building to jump off of instead. You know, that kind of rubs people the wrong way there, Adnan, don't you think?
100%. I think that, like, he should be there.
Is he avoiding the jokes? He knows that there's just going to be a lot of, like, you know, the classic jokes. Is that why? Like, what's he avoiding?
Ben said apparently he was shooting. That's why he's doing whatever. Mr. Apostle 10. He's, trying to kill himself with a motorcycle off the Burj Khalifa, whatever the hell he likes to do in his spare time. But, I you know, to Ben's point, Spielberg said to him at the luncheon, like, you saved Hollywood's ass. We're all back because of you. And even with my disdain and contempt for him, I will willingly admit, of course, Top Gun Maverick got people back in theaters. You know, that was enormous. Someone said to me, he goes, he saved movies. I go, well, he didn't save movies. He helped save movie theaters. I will completely concede that point. I wouldn't say save movies. But the fact he wasn't there back in the day, Ben, you'd go, oh, there's Jack Nicholson front row. Like, always the biggest stars were there. It was missing, but Top Gun Maverick is now an Academy Award winning film, and fine, the best sound, I have no issue with that, but it was a little odd that he wasn't there.
No Jim Cameron either. Is he mad that the director, he was mad about the director thing, huh?
That feels more like personal. That feels more like, hey, I directed Avatar 2, what's up, what are we doing here? You guys didn't give me the award the first Avatar, now I gotta go to the second one, come on. So maybe that's a little personal. That front row felt a little light last night, not gonna lie. Maybe again, the Knicks are in town. You know, they're playing well.
Denzel's in the front row with the crypto.
No?
The Knicks avoiding the play-in now, looking like a 5 seed, going to face the Cavaliers first round. That's impacted the Oscars.
Well, I got Ana de Armas in the front row. You know, she's been in 4 movies. Mm. Right? The front row is for Meryl Streep. Like, everybody's at the Knicks game. I get it.
That's a fair point. Ben Lyons of Bonjour Sports Talk. He does an awesome job. Go check out Amazon for all the greatest stuff there. Closing thoughts, Ben? Anything you want to say about the Oscars you liked, you didn't like, what you'd like to see next year?
Tell me how else you get a film about time traveling and, you know, your imagination into the public zeitgeist without these award shows. They employ a lot of people. Sadly, not the three of us this year, but hopefully next year we'll be back on that Oscar stage.
Ben Lyons is the best. Thanks so much, brother. I can't thank you enough for getting me to the Oscars those 2 times, and we'll be back again. And I'm thrilled for your success with Amazon. Starting a new venture. Cody, you know what this is like. You leave ESPN. It's easy when you got those 4 letters behind you. Now when you're starting MetalArk, Ben's now doing that with Amazon. It's an incredible challenge, but I'm proud of you, man, and I appreciate you giving us some time.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. You know, it's interesting, these moments that happen every year and folks like us who are kind of, you know, lucky enough to be able to touch them, you sort of check yourself. You're like, wow, remember I got to interview Cate Blanchett the night she won for Blue Jasmine. She's holding her Oscars and she gives me a hug. And, you know, last night I didn't get to cover the Oscars, but I did a live stream with Mario Chalmers and Caitlin Wilson from Kansas, Chalk Talk Jayhawks. So continuing to touch the culture there as we continue on our journey of storytelling.
March Madness right around the corner. Mario Chalmers gonna love it. Great job, Ben.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, Ben Lyons, always crushing it. You know Ben is the best. There's a couple other Oscar thoughts I wanted to mention. I was really hooked, because as I said to him, what's the one you wanted to see? And I mentioned that the shorts, 12 of the 15 that are available on streaming, and Ben really wanted to, or he was moved by, that one that was won for best live-action short. The one that I really wanted to see, and of course, listeners of Cinephile know, is Stranger at the Gate. We interviewed the director, and that did not win. It was not favored to win. It was the favorite was The Elephant Whispers, which won, which is available on Netflix, and I'll talk about it in a second. It's really good, but that was a bummer for me. I really want to see Stranger at the Gate win. Malala Yousafzai is the producer. You saw Kimmel interview her at one point, so I thought, okay, maybe it's got a little bit of juice, her star power, so to speak, but no. Documentary feature, thrilled for Navalny, which I was correct on that pick, and I thought the speech was really good. I go, this guy's going to get political, but it wasn't too much. I mean, normally the Oscars, people get mad, they start rolling their eyes. Okay, yeah. Don't start talking about gun control, the war in Russia. That was the only time, which was accurate. He's like, this is a film about a guy who opposed Putin, who's currently in prison.
His wife came up and talked, very moving.
Yeah, I thought that was really, really a nice moment. Pinocchio, not surprising, but I did like the fact that he mentioned his parents. A lot of mentions of mom specifically, yes. And I love the way he said, he goes, my parents are no longer with us, but I'm still their son. I thought that was a really nice moment. And I liked when Kimmel did that monologue, and he was going through each person off the gate, and he said Guillermo, and they get to Guillermo del Toro. He goes, no, not that Guillermo. And he went to the Guillermo from the Kimmel show.
Yeah.
Again, it's for his audience. Not everyone's going to get it, but I thought it was hilarious, that cutaway to Guillermo del Toro. Adapted screenplay wins women talking. I'm thrilled for Sarah Polley, Canadian from Toronto. They mentioned that as she went up there. Again, Cody and I were not huge on the film. People have asked me, what's it about? I go, it's just women talking. I don't think it's going to get a huge audience, but I was really happy that Sarah Polley won an Academy Award in a category, by the way, which I was not crazy about the other nominees. We went through all the major award winners. In case you're curious, as far as the numbers, I went 17 of 23.
I feel like the two shorts screwed you.
Yes.
And you picking Babylon screwed you.
Yeah, Babylon screwed me. I went, oh, you're right. Oh, and 0-2 production design score, as I just mentioned to Ben. And I also got banged on those shorts. Animated short film, the one that Ben loved, which was great, The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse. That one, which I predicted, but I was wrong on live action short. I would thought it would be Le Pupil, which is a French film. Instead, it was an Irish Goodbye. And I was wrong on the other short as well. The one that I mentioned earlier, Stranger at the Gate, I was going for as well. So 1-3 in the shorts. But that, to me, is the key. People say, well, how'd you do? 17-6. Okay, Samson went 18-5. But you got to get the big ones. Like, he missed on Best Actor. He went with Austin Butler for Elvis, and I went correctly there. So I think that when you look at the votes, they should actually be voted as far as,
They should be weighted. They should be weighted.
Would love Deakins, but I'm not surprised he didn't win for Empire of Light. Would have been nice to see, but that was not surprising. Costume design, I knew Ruth Carter. By the way, huge ovation. Like, the fact Ruth Carter is a costume designer. She wins and she got a standing ovation. I said, okay, these people know she's a heavyweight in that category, and it was nice to see her get that kind of reception. Cody had said to me before he was going to put some money on Andrea Riseborough. That would have been the moment. I mean, you would have paid off your mortgage if she
won. 0-4. I could just tell when they, like, showed Andrea Riseborough. I was like, they don't have her in a spot of, like, if she was, she'd be sitting somewhere else if she won.
There's definitely something to that. Ki-Hui Kwan, I swear to God, was in the second row. Like, he's going to win. He's right there. All at once, people were right at the front. Like, yeah. You guys are probably going to win, so let's make this easy for
you. They had Angela Bassett really close, so I thought she was going to win. But that was, she didn't seem thrilled that she lost.
I don't want to repeat myself for those who listen to the Levitard show, but I recognize different audiences you may not. So Chris brings this up, and he's right. Dan mentioned it to me. There's nothing I love more than, again, awkward and uncomfortable humor. I remember at the Tony Awards when Billy Crystal, who I loved, Chris did not see Mr. Saturday Night on Broadway. He did see him performing and therefore mocked him. Hey. But I'm telling you, Mr. Saturday Night is awesome. When Billy Crystal did not win Best Actor, the guy who went for MJ, Billy Crystal did not smile. He did not clap. He looked pissed. I thought it was awesome. Like, I think it's bad sportsmanship, to be clear. If my child did it, I'd be enraged. But as somebody who's just there for the entertainment, I love it. So when Angela Bassett did not win, you're right, frozen face, didn't smile, didn't clap, like pissed.
Begrudgingly stood up, too, because they did the thing where it's like, we're going to all stand up for Jamie Lee Curtis. And you could tell that she was like, oh, everyone's, I can't have the shot of me being the only one not standing, so I will stand. Begrudgingly.
Yeah, begrudgingly is the perfect word for it. But it was, I just laugh at moments like that because maybe she's right. I mean, I guess if I just looked at each individual performance, Wakanda Forever is probably a stronger performance. You know, she's regal, and it's not like Jamie Lee Curtis is giving her best work. But hey, man, hot dog fingers are going to win sometimes, and that will happen. So congratulations to all the winners. Overall, I thought it was a great night for the Academy. Let's do a couple new movies, and I do want to get really into Million Dollar Baby here at Cody and call it a day. The Quiet Girl, rural Ireland, 1981. A quiet, neglected girl is sent away from her dysfunctional family to live with foster parents for the summer. She blossoms in their care, but in this house where there are meant to be no secrets, she discovers one. It's a beautiful film. First off, this will make me sound ignorant, but I've got to be honest. Cody, did you realize in Ireland they don't just speak English? There is actual Irish. This is why this is up for foreign film. I started watching the movie and I go, I thought in Ireland they spoke English, but they actually speak Irish, which is why this is nominated for Best Foreign Film. The majority of the film is not in English. Am I stupid for not doing that? Guillermo, put it on the poll.
For once, I knew that. Look at me. How about me? I'll pat myself on the back here.
I knew it in that, okay, obviously it's not her best international feature film, but as I was watching this, well, maybe it's in Polish. Like, I didn't know. I'm like, no, there's Irish is a specific language. That's how dumb I am.
I thought the language didn't matter. It's just like, where was the movie made? Like, you know what I mean? That's what I thought it was more based off that.
No, it's got to be like 60% of it has to be in a different language other than English.
Okay.
And then it's also where it's produced by. But that's the main thing is the actual language. That's why international feature film is, for years, was known as foreign film, obviously redubbed. But regardless, some of it's in English. Obviously, there's subtitles. That doesn't impact guys like me. Combe Barrier had made the film. I thought it was a beautiful movie. It was really sweet. And I think that it's one of those movies that kind of sneaks up on you. Like, I'm watching it, and it's like, you know, Irish family, big family. She's kind of neglected. Okay, you're going to go live with these people for a while. What's really the story about? What's the plot? But it's about emotion, and it's about how it all unfolds, and she gets this kinship with this family, and it almost feels like foster parents. And it's got probably the best movie ending of any movie that came out last year. Like, that was the big thing that walloped me. I love a movie, because so often it happens, you watch the film, The first two-thirds are really good, and they don't stick the ending. They don't stick the landing. In this case, I was watching, I'm like, oh, it's a good film, it's a sweet movie, it's about a little girl making a relationship, and then I go, the last 5 minutes, you're in tears. I said, this is a hell of a movie ending. It really wallops you. I thought it was, I don't want to ruin it. I want people to see it, but I thought it was really beautifully done. 3.5 Maple Leafs, couple blurbs for you. Ty Burr, my man. The story is simple. It's a connection between an invisible girl and a woman who finally sees her that forms the backbone of this lovely handmade film. Michael O'Sullivan of Washington Post, in a world of noise and noisy jumbled films, this story of found family speaks loudest when saying nothing. That's a hell of a blurb. Well written.
This, by the way, just you talking about that film, it's Million Dollar Baby. A lot of similar, like, you know, found family.
Yes.
Like, kind of foster.
Neglected, finding a home. Yeah, I swear, I didn't even think of that connection. I just wanted to do Million Dollar Baby because it's the Oscars. But you're right, there's definitely a lot here. Martin Sy of AV Club, without voiceover narration tying everything together, some scenes feel out of place, random, or offer a little beyond aesthetics. Well, it's definitely an observational drama, but I guess where Martin's getting that. I did want to mention a couple of the shorts, as I said, because they are readily available. So I want people to be able to see these. You know, the Oscars are over now. You say, who cares? Well, you should watch it, especially if you like elephants. If you're Ron McGill, you're going to be moved to tears by The Elephant Whisperers. It's available on Netflix. It's a documentary short. It's 40 minutes, and it's beautiful. Again, I was cheering for Stranger at the Gate. I really wanted to see that film. Again, we had the director as a personal story. But Elephant Whisperers is really well done. It's about this Indian couple who literally look after elephants, and these are like elephants who are like neglected or abandoned or damaged, and like a three-month-old elephant. I mean, there's nothing cuter, like playing with his ears, feeding him. You know, the one elephant can only be fed by the mom. He won't be fed by the dad. And one of the – they saw, obviously – in subtitles, I believe it's in Hindi, but one of the characters says, like, elephants are like one of the most intelligent creatures alive. He's like, aside from talking, elephants are right there with us. Like, they know how to play, they know how to laugh, they know how to love,
they mourn.
Yeah, like, it's amazing, man. So my sister-in-law loves elephants. If you're a big elephant fan, you're going to love The Elephant Whisperers. It's a really sweet movie. Two animal movies, of course, nominated there. Chris and I have already talked about Haul Out and about walruses and just what strange animals they are. That film did not win. I also saw The Martha Mitchell Effect, which was also available on Netflix and nominated for Best Documentary Short. I believe that was also around 40 minutes. Didn't know much about this. I think for people who have seen the Julia Roberts movie or miniseries called Gaslit. I'm not familiar with it, but I believe she's playing Martha Mitchell in that. Martha Mitchell, again, I didn't know nothing about this. Watergate, she had a really huge hand in it, and they really smartly mentioned it. Early on, there's a clip of Richard Nixon who's saying, without Martha Mitchell, there would be no Watergate. And she was the one that was really kind of profound in this. Yeah, it was a limited series on Stars. Julia Roberts and Sean Penn focused on Martha Mitchell, whose life was ruined by scandal. So I don't know really what that entails. This was more about how she uncovered Watergate and her husband and being implicit in it and saying that, again, essentially she's a whistleblower. I mean, if you have a whistleblower Hall of Fame, you're putting Martha Mitchell in there. Again, if you're politically inclined, if you find that era of American politics interesting from the 1970s, Tricky Dick and all the rest of it, it's 40 minutes. It's available on Netflix. I'd give Elephant Whisperers 3.5 Maple Leafs. I'd give Martha Mitchell Effect 3 Maple Leafs. Documentary feature, we've done all those before. Again, I'm really happy about Navalny. Would have been nice for Fire of Love, but it's okay. All the Beauty and the Bloodshed at one point was the favorite, did not win last night. And I also just briefly wanted to mention some of the other shorts, because some of those categories, again, Ben and I mentioned My Year of Dicks. I mean, I've got to tell you a little bit about
it. I got to check out My Year of Dicks.
Okay, so maybe we'll do that next week, because I don't want to do it. I don't want to spoil it. It's 24 minutes,
I'm watching,
and it's
it
on Hulu.
I tell promise.
You
right,
okay, I'll just tell you this. It's a 15-year-old who wants to lose her virginity and is exploring how to do so with a variety of different men.
If I don't watch it, dick move by me.
Amen to that. And if you don't watch it, we'll do it next week. But I don't want to ruin it because there's one scene in particular where the father talks to his daughter about losing her virginity. And I'm sure you will not have the same type of conversation.
That is not a conversation I'm looking forward to.
But it is incredibly funny and strange. And as you heard Ben say, he also enjoyed it as well. We had talked about Knight Ride before, the film about the little person who goes on the train, picks up the trans person. Le Pupil, I also saw. That was also nominated for live action short film. I was wrong there as far as I was able to win. It's about a bunch of French girls at a school for run by nuns, and just about their desires and how they're being impacted. It's available on Disney Plus. I thought it was a good film. I mean, I thought it was going to win because the stuff I had read was the favorite. Here's a really brief blurb on it, if you're curious. A story about pure and selfish desires, freedom and devotion, and the anarchy that is capable of flowering in the minds of girls within the confines of a strict religious boarding school at Christmas. Again, it's available at Disney Plus. It's translated as The Pupils, but it's called Le Pupil, 37 minutes. I'd give it 2.5 Maple Leafs. I thought it was a sweet film. As I said, it was kind of about anarchy and these girls trying to get back at the nuns. All right, that's the Oscars. I want to do a little bit here on Million Dollar Baby. 2017, the New York Times released their best film so far of this century. The best was amazing. There Will Be Blood. Yes, which somehow my brother still doesn't like. But Million Dollar Baby was number 3 on that list. And I want to talk about this film because every few years I watch it. And when I tell people, they go, are you crazy? And I go, it's one of my top 20 favorite movies of all time. They said, no, I know. It's a great movie. But how could you rewatch something like that? It's so depressing. And I said, no, but movies like that, which are so profoundly well made, to me, it just moves me. I don't find it depressing. I find it inspiring because it can be so powerful. Now, yes. Obviously, I'm saddened by it. But when I see the craft, that's it makes me think of the Valvano line. He's like, if you can laugh and cry on the same day, then you've had a full day. That's like, how I feel about Million Dollar Baby.
Like when you see the love that Clint Eastwood's character develops for Hilary Swank's character, like that, even though it's happening around a sad event, that makes you happy. I agree with you. Like, while it is a sad movie, it makes you feel like there was love there.
Again, I can't imagine people who have not seen the film, but it just takes me back to when I first saw Million Dollar Baby. I saw it in the theater in Toronto. It was, you know, mid-December, and there hadn't been a ton of buzz about it. You know, so often now, these movies, you've already heard so much about it. You've seen the trailer, you know. I just knew Clint Eastwood movie. I didn't even hear, like, any Oscar buzz. It was just a Clint Eastwood movie. It's getting great reviews. I'm like, okay. I don't think I even watched a trailer. And it's got Hilary Swank at Morgan Freeman. I go, okay, I'm in. I'll go check it out. And I saw it. I want to see either opening night or very early on. And that feeling, I mean, that's like a top 5 feeling in a movie theater. That ending, because that it was the entire theater was just silenced. And it was like you realize you had seen and witnessed this great artistic triumph. You were inexpressibly moved by it, and you were saddened by it, haunted by it. And the score is so good. Like Eastwood does his own music. So that piano score, as soon as the credits come up, directed by Clint Eastwood, I go, I'll never forget, being in that theater and what that emotion was like. It was amazing if you could harness it. And here's the thing about Million Dollar Baby. If I explain it to somebody, real simple. You know, it's a determined woman working with a hardened boxing trainer to become a professional. That's what it's about, right? But here's what it's about. That movie lifts your heart, and then it breaks it. It's about an underdog facing long odds. You know, she's the only, as Morgan Freeman says in the narration, she knew one thing. She was trash. You know, she's the woman there in the working as a waitress, getting up scraps of food. Oh, it's for my dog. And then she's going home and eating it. She's got nothing. Boxing's the one thing in life that gives her any sort of an outlet, gives her any sort of a passion. And she follows that one pursuit. And then ultimately that pursuit ends up crushing her. And it's so devastating because as he keeps telling her, you know, always protect yourself. And that moment, it's not necessarily whether she didn't protect herself because she got sucker punched or he didn't protect herself because he didn't get the stool enough quickly. But the point of the film is it's such an incredible bait and switch. You're watching it thinking, I've seen this movie before. It's just a female Rocky. It's the rise and fall of this boxer, and it's really well made. And again, because it's Eastwood, it's well directed. And Henry Bumstead, the production designer, is well edited. And again, he's got a great cast. I'm like, oh, so it's a really sweet, nice story. And then when that happens, like that moment where the accident happens, you go, oh my God, like the film just completely shifts into a different level. And like that last 40 minutes, you're like, it's just so unexpected and it's so powerful and so moving because you think the story's about one thing and ends up being about something else entirely.
And why wasn't this other boxer put in jail for this sucker punch that paralyzes this boxer? Like think about this news story. Sucker punch paralyzes potential champion boxer. I don't know. I mean, that was, man, I have a lot of questions. It's obviously moving. Like her family coming in, trying to get her, get all her money. And what's his name? What's his character's name? I always want to call him Clint Eastwood. Frankie Dunn. He protects her. The odd part, the thing that's a little weird about the end is that he's the one giving her the medicine that, like, you know, spoiler alert, Can we spoil it? Can I?
It'll be 20-year anniversary next year, so we don't.
Okay.
We can
at the end, he essentially, you know, gives her the shot that kills her. Essentially, like, what's the official term for that?
Absolutely.
Mercy. And it, like, he's the one. I feel like a doctor would be the one giving that shot. It's just a weird part to me that I'm like, why is he the one without anybody around? Like, don't we have to sign off on this stuff? Like, it seemed like an odd way to like actually do it.
Maybe at that time euthanasia wasn't allowed. Maybe in that state it wasn't allowed. So she knew she couldn't just ask the doctors. Like, I actually know a guy I worked with at the score last week died of an assisted suicide. So it's like, you know, now it's an era in which, you know, you as a patient or the next of kin can say, hey, I'd like to let the guy go from there. So maybe this was an era, right, pre-Kevorkian, that she couldn't do it. So she knew she couldn't ask the doctor to be administered medicine to die. She's going to ask Frankie. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. I mean, when she bites her tongue, and she almost bled to death. You're like, this is obviously a woman who does not want to be.
That's true. I was going to say, because like there was almost a look in her eye when she saw how sad he was at the end that I thought she was going to be like, oh, you actually love me. Never mind. I want to live. Like, I thought there was going to be, but then it's just like, nope, done.
That raises the controversy of the film. I mean, listen, the movie was a juggernaut. Once it came out, people were like, oh my God, it's incredible. Like right away, as Ebert's blurb said, this movie's a masterpiece. But that doesn't mean there wasn't going to be some backlash. And part of the backlash was from people about the whole concept of euthanasia. There was quadriplegics, and paraplegics saying, what this movie is saying is that if you can't live an able-bodied life, you should just kill yourself. Like this, like no, like she could have gone back to life. She, as at one point Eastwood says, we're going to get you a wheelchair where you can move it through a straw and you can live a life. Like they're like, this movie is basically saying, no, if you can't box, if you can't use your limbs,
right,
you might as well just kill yourself. To that end, Eastwood responded and said, I'm not making a judgment on how people should live their lives. This is how this character chooses to live their life. This character is in so much pain that she no longer wants to live. I'm not telling you what to do with your life. The other part of it, too, was just the concept of euthanasia and mercy killings, which is still a hot topic for some, saying that, you know, only a doctor should be allowed to kill somebody. Only God should be allowed to kill you if you're still alive. And Eastwood again said, again, I'm not going into that debate. If you don't believe in euthanasia or mercy killing, that's your discretion. But this character does.
Right.
That's what I'm telling about the story. Frankie believes in doing that.
Oh, I just love when Morgan Freeman knocks out Anthony Mackie.
Mackie played a great villain. Like, he's one of those character actors at the time. You know, obviously ended up doing bigger films, but he's so good at the way he's baiting Jay Baruchel. Jay Baruchel, noted Canadian from Montreal, huge Habs fan. You and I love him because of This Is the End. He's buddies with Rogan and all those guys. But like at this point, this was like 2004. Like, Jay Baruchel's like, he's playing this dim-witted, simple man. I'm going to be the champion of the world.
That role, do you think he's like, this is the role I'm getting?
No, he's thrilled. Are you kidding? He's in a Clint Eastwood movie at that point. He was very young in his career. I'm like, oh my God, I think he went over the moon. He's like, wow, okay, I'm playing the simpleton, but I'm like, to me, he's treating it like a Mice of Men. I'm playing Lenny. I'm in an Eastwood film. I'm with Morgan Freeman. I get one of the great moments, you're right, when Scrap puts on the glove, get a job, punk, 109. Like, I mean, that's a real kind of crowd-pleasing moment in a movie which is not a crowd-pleaser. That's definitely a fun scene, and he's really good in it. How do you get this ass in the water?
He was great, honestly. You're right. Like, I just meant, like, visually, he looks like someone, like hey, you could play this character. I felt like that had to be like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe in the casting, he's like, okay, I'm not exactly the matinee idol I was hoping to be, but hey, I'm going to be in an Academy Award-winning film.
Yeah.
I love the dialogue by Paul Haggis. It's adapted from a series of stories by F.X. O'Toole. I haven't read the stories upon which it's based, but there's some moments that you go, oh, it's so good, it's got to be ad-libbed. In particular, the scene where Eastwood's talking to Morgan Freeman about giving him some money, and he's like, you know, you got holes in your socks, and he says, these are my sleeping socks. I like to have air in those socks. And someone goes, well, that must have been an ad-lib. No, that's how good Haggis' script was. Eastwood kept virtually every word for word from the script. He goes, that's one of those you go, has to be an ad-lib. Morgan Freeman cleans with those guys. And he goes, oh, that's how well-written the script is. It's about, these are my sleeping socks. And if I give you some money, could you get some new socks? That money might go down to the track. Like, Scrap himself is an interesting character. And a lot of that goes back to the narration. The narration is, A, incredibly well-written, and B, incredibly well-performed. As I've said about Morgan Freeman, he's got a voice that belongs in the Smithsonian. So from the first passages of the movie, once you hear his voice of, there's only one man I never wanted to fight, and boom, you see Frankie Dunne, you go, I'm in the movie. Like, I'm already in it, because that's how good Morgan Freeman's narration is, and again, the quality of that narration, and the way he's talking about Scrap and all the rest of it.
Why wouldn't have Morgan Freeman gone to Vegas with them to like go to that fight. Like, I get it all, because when she finally gets the championship fight, they're going to Vegas. And he's like, I needed someone with me, like Frankie Dunn's like, I need someone like with me to help be the ring person, and Morgan's just like, I can't go. I'm not going.
I can't leave the gym. The gym falls apart if I'm not here.
But it's like, I get that ends up like he ends up getting mad at him because like he says it could have not happened if he was there. So it's, but it's just like, I get it. That's a setup for that scene. But it's just like, just go, man. You would like, why would, in any situation, he would go.
But Scrapp is a guy who feel like, I think like he never leaves the gym. I mean, he literally lives in the gym, right? He's got a cot there. I think, one, he does feel like that level of, like, and I know guys like that. Like, they're like, nope, I got to work. I can't leave the shop. I'm the one running the shop. I can't leave for 2 days' notice. That's fine. And two, I think, because of his own past, I think what happened with boxing, I think that he watches boxing, but he can't get too close to it. It's like getting too close to the sun. I don't think he wants to go to the heavyweight fight. It's like a football player who suffered a crippling injury. He may still watch the NFL, but I can't go back to the arena. I don't want to be there. I can't be around.
That's true.
It's too close to him.
Good movie, man.
Too close,
really good.
Yeah. Other aspects of it, Eastwood, just his acting is amazing. You know, he won the Oscar for directing, but some critics said he should have won for acting. I never saw Eastwood like this. You've seen that gruff curmudgeon. As I said before, my dear friend Mike Kiss, his great Clint Eastwood impression. Three times this film, he says, what? And every time he does it, I think of Mike. But his acting is so good.
I remember
Owen Gleiberman's blurb was amazing. He goes, I never thought Clint Eastwood would have this kind of role in him. I never thought he'd be in a Douglas Sirk melodrama. I mean, one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when he's talking to the priest. Early on, he's, you know, busting his chops. He's got this great relationship of toying with him and explain the Holy Trinity to me, et cetera. But that scene near the end where he's like crying through tears, I never thought I'd see Clint Eastwood crying about this. And he says, you know, she's not asking for God's help. She's asking for mine. And he says, Frankie, I've been seeing you at Mass every day for the last 23 years. The only kind that comes that much is the kind that can't forgive himself for something he's done. If you do this, you'll be so far gone, you'll be lost forever, a place that I can't reach you again. I mean, it is such a good scene, the way it's so well written and well delivered, and yet Frankie still has to take toll of the situation. Love the cinematography, particularly that shot when Scrapp and Clint Eastwood were talking, and he knows what he's about to do. He says, you got a fighter I don't know about, basically saying you're about to do something I don't know about. And at the end, when Frankie walks out of that hallway, beautifully shot, and you see Morgan Freeman kind of step out of the shadows because he followed him to the hospital to see what happened. I mean, it's lyrical. Again, I mentioned the score, beautiful music. Eastwood always does his own music. And most of all, I mentioned the ending as far as the emotional part of it, but when he says to her, Makushla, which is the nickname he gives her, it's Gaelic. I don't know what it means. It's something in Gaelic. But when he says to her, it means my darling. It means my blood.
Oof.
I mean, there's not a dry eye in the theater. Oh. He kisses her on the cheek. I said, it's just a knockout, man. It's a movie
it's
that
so
absolutely
good.
Knocks me out. And I love that last little bit of narration as well, as he leaves the hospital and what Morgan Freeman is saying, because, you know, the whole part of it is that Eastwood's writing letters to his daughter. And every time those letters come back returned, who can imagine what he did to his daughter, but she'll never speak to him again. And now Morgan Freeman is taking it upon himself to write his daughter. That is why this is a movie. And that last great, great closing line, you know, but somewhere in the, you know, I just wanted to let you know what kind of man your father really was. And you got that great outside shot of a blurry window. He's having some lemon meringue pie. He's like, I'm hoping you found some peace. I'm hoping you found what he was looking for. It's just a hell of a movie, man. I could talk about Million Dollar Baby all day.
It's great.
Some blurbs for you. Stanley Kaufman, The New Republic. The only differences between this new film and its many forebears are that the young hopeful is a woman and the finish is unforeseen. David Anson, as an actor, Eastwood has rarely taken on a character as complex as Frankie Dunn. And Richard Corliss of Time magazine, like Eastwood, it's a relic that dazzles you with its footwork, daring, and class. Won the big ones, as I mentioned, as far as the Academy Awards were concerned. Made like $136 million on a $20 million budget. It was a huge hit. Million Dollar Baby. If you haven't seen it, I wanted to do it this time here in our Academy Award version of Cinephile. Thanks once again to Ben Lyons. Always doing a fantastic job. I watched a bunch of old movies, so maybe you want to kind of get up to speed. You want me to let you know what we're going to be doing? So we're going to be doing Wag the Dog in the weeks ahead. I watched that movie again. Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro. I watched Mystic River again. 20th anniversary of that film. Speaking of Clint Eastwood, Sean Penn, Kevin Bacon, Lawrence Fishburne, and Tim Robbins in an Academy Award-winning role. So those movies will be coming up. As far as new movies are concerned, I mentioned this to Cody before, it's a lot of sequels this month, so maybe we'll do some Scream 6, maybe we'll do Shazam Fury of the Gods. That's coming up this weekend. I hope you've all enjoyed Creed 3 and Cocaine Bear, and once again, thank you for the support of Cinephile. Thanks for appreciating us. We appreciate you. I'll see you at the movies.
privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text THIN to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text THIN to 200-300. That's THIN to 200-300. THIN to 200-300.